This is CliffCentral.com.
Justice Malala is here. It is time for our weekly installment of The Burning Platform, which is South Africa's most discussed political analysis. It is, because I can tell you I was in London over the weekend and people were talking about The Burning Platform.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
But they did say to me, it's a pity Justice isn't here. Why do we have to see you?
Well, look, I was at the Nando's function on Monday and a lot of people said, why do you have to see you? Where's Gareth? So, you know, it's all good.
So we're both getting a bit of the attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Justice, never a dull week. Just when we thought Zuma had exited stage left, then we had Ramaphosa. Then for a while, Supra was in the headlines. He's still in the headlines. We can talk about him in a second. But we mustn't forget that the DA is quietly destroying itself. You know, they say the revolution eats its children. There hasn't even been a revolution, and the DA eating their children. What's going on here?
The DA is an amazing thing because it's done really well. And the past 10 years, it's had a gift horse, and that was Jacob Zuma.
Yeah.
Jacob Zuma, just every day there was something to talk about. And it just cast the ANC and the government and Zuma himself in a very poor light. So, you know, they've had...
All they had to do was sit there and be quiet.
Exactly. And, you know, people just say, I'm going with the DA. That's it.
So with Zuma, let's just give a quick reflection here. They did grow their constituency quite enormously. In fact, they were the fastest growing party in South Africa. They grew among black voters, which they were hell-bent on doing. Helen Zille deserves a lot of the credit there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, for Musi, it would have been to come in and to just keep the ship traveling steady in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things that the DA is now involved with, where it looks like it doesn't know what it's doing, it's basically stuff that they didn't even need to talk about. They didn't need to just keep your mouth quiet, shut, and you know, things would have worked out for them. But they go, you know, so first of all, you look at what's happening with Patricia de Lille, and now this week, her being kicked out of the party. You know, the problem with the DeLille matter is, what has she done? So first of all, there were allegations of corruption against her, involving the buses like we have in Tshwane, Joburg, the MyCity buses. That's the local city transport business. So it started off there that, no, she approved this and so forth. Turns out that, no, actually, there's nothing to that story. Then, oh, you know, there was another corruption issue, but you don't get a full sense of what it is exactly.
Yeah, it was something to do with her house. And then she even let a news team through. I mean, it was so embarrassing. They showed, first of all, I don't expect, you know, our mayors are not kings and our politicians are not kings. So we don't want them to live badly, and we don't want them to live like kings.
Exactly.
But we don't want to be I mean, here's Patricia. She's showing them the trelly door and how she put that in. And you kind of get this, you get a bit embarrassed. You're like, you know, we don't want to
go there. No. It's just like, you know.
So tacky.
So this thing became a farce. The whole, oh, she's corrupt, da da da. You know, of all the things that one can say about Patricia de Lille, I think corruption is the least of those things. You
when
know,
she's been at the vanguard of fighting corruption.
Exactly.
Before it was en vogue, before everybody was talking about corruption, Patricia was the one who blew the whistle on the arms deal.
Exactly.
And it seems to me, and this is where I need your guidance, it seems to me someone in the DA or some group of people in the DA decided, this woman needs to go. Let's find whatever we can to get rid of her.
I think the DA's problem, and the DA needs to confront this, is that she is an outspoken, tough. You know, sometimes we don't say this enough, but if I'm a guy and I'm the boss in an organization, you know, I'll make decisions and I'll say, you know, Gareth, sorry, we won't take your opinion. We'll go with this opinion, and it's my opinion, and so forth. When it's a man, people will go around saying, Justice is so decisive. He's a real leader. If it's a woman, I think there is an element of she's bossy. Even take, you mentioned Helen Ziller earlier. Mm. Helen Ziller gets a lot of shtick, and I think she's done horrific things in some of her communications on Twitter. But would we judge her the same way if she was a man? It would be, no one judges Tony Leung, who has a very forceful leader, the way they judge the forcefulness of a Helen Ziller. Yeah.
We live in a very patriarchal country.
Exactly. So I think one of the things that one can say about Patricia de Lille is that she's very strong, that she's very definite about some of the things she wants. I think that she'll come a cropper on the issue, and she needs to defend herself on the issue of the municipal manager, I think, where she allegedly said, give my candidate full marks because that's the guy I want, and there were other applicants to the job. I think of all the things one can accuse her of, that one sounds like she needs to answer for. But other than that, there isn't much. So what you heard over the past few months is the DA actually passing a new regulation, and people are calling it the De Lille clause, just so that we can retrospectively go for her and say, you've brought us into disrepute, we need to get rid of you. That sort of thing kept on coming up, and it looks like, so to your question, it looks like there are people who just didn't like her. So whether she's right or wrong, whether she's guilty or not guilty, she has to go, whatever. So what you heard over the past week is that a new charge comes up, and that charge is, you went on a radio show, you said to the host, you know what, whatever happens, I'm getting out of here. Now, that's pretty damning in itself. But Patricia de Lille is today not the mayor, or might be the mayor of Cape Town, not because of anything that she has done in terms of corruption and so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
She is out because she said just last week or the week before, I just want to clear my name. Then we can move forward. I can leave or I can stay. So to the public mind, to those who voted and supported Patricia de Lille in the Cape, and I'm not saying that she was solely responsible for the rise of the DA there. She was part of a team. But I think it's worth saying, to many people, it just seems like we're going to get Gareth, or we're going to get justice. Yeah. And whatever means, it's a hatchet job.
So,
and I think that's where the DA has put itself, that it looks like there is a cabal, there is a clique, and it wants some people out.
I'm confused, though. Who is the DA? I mean, their communications really have gone to shit, and... No, they have.
I'm not sure
if Musi is having trouble leading this party, if there are, you know, people who are coming up in the ranks who are starting to flex their muscle, if it's this James Self guy who seems to be very powerful in the DA. Mm. Who is really turning the levers and pushing the buttons here? I mean, who would be so anti-Patricia?
I think there's a grouping in the Cape. I think what's happened with Patricia de Lille is that the DA in Cape Town and the DA in the Western Cape has become hugely divided. You remember that they had an election last year,
mm-hmm.
Where it became very, and these things happen in organizations when you have elections, but it became very racial. The tone took on a very racial kind of fight. It also took on a Helen Ziller support, anti-Helen Ziller support.
Oh, right.
So Patricia de Lille was one of those who wasn't seen to be on the so-called Helen Ziller, in the so-called Helen Ziller camp. The gentleman who's now the leader of the DA in the Western Cape, Madiki Zela, mm-hmm. Is his surname, who was very close to and used to be a spokesperson for Helen Ziller, finally won that contest. And I think she fell foul of that. After she stood up against Madiki Zela for the provincial leadership post and lost, I think that's when her problem started. It was, you need to go. And I think that has been building up and building up, and the past 18 months point to that. So Well, I think many organizations.
I would have thought that the DA could have used someone like Patricia de Lille in these upcoming elections, because Patricia de Lille, I mean, she might have even been, certainly in terms of national politics, she's on the same level as Musi Maimane. She's proven herself. Some people would say she's more experienced and more of a candidate than Musi Maimane is. And the DA doesn't have people like that anymore.
No.
You know, the next best people for them are Pretoria's mayor, the Tshwane mayor.
Yes. And Solim Simanga.
Solim Simanga and Herman Mashaba. Those are their celebrity candidates going forward. But I don't know. Patricia could have been, first of all, because she's a woman. Second of all, because she's proved her credentials, you know, through the struggle. She was a PAC member for a long time. She was an outspoken critic of a number of excesses of the ANC government after that. She was this foot soldier against corruption from the very start. It would be a massive liability to have her working with their adversaries.
The problem for the DA is this. If you're a party, think about the DP in 1994. The DP is the party of Helen Suzman. You know, it is, you can't question them. But they get 1.7%. 1.7%.
Tiny.
And it's, what happened here? And it was a shock. It was a shock to the system. But Tony Leon starts basically gunning for the ANC and raising support. By late early 2001, he gobbles up the National Party. It becomes the Democratic Alliance. Just keeps on growing. You grow from 1.7% to 27% in just 22, 23 years. That is phenomenal. And what it means is that everyone has a place in the DA, essentially, because you're growing. So if you're growing, you know, if you're in the ANC, it's a shrinking piece of cake. So it's, oops, Gareth, you have a bigger piece. I want the piece. And many of us, all of us want the shrinking cake. Mm-hmm. With a DA, you have a different problem. So leadership battles in the DA shouldn't be a problem. If there was a real issue with Patricia de Lille, the offer that Musi Maimane made that, look, go, let's go, you, maybe you should go to parliament and so forth, that offer should have been made way back, so that you have a smooth transition and you retain that superstar quality that someone like Patricia de Lille has. Instead, you seem to be a 27% party and you're battling among yourselves, when actually in the ANC, if the ANC goes from 62 to 55, some people are going to lose their places. Mm-hmm. So you can understand that everyone is clinging on. But in the DA, more people will come in. It's like, come on, guys. Let's all get it together. So this is where the logic of what is happening in the DA is hard to work out. But, you know, I mean, I think let's not beat about the bush here. Musi Maimane is clearly not in charge of the party. He says something about white privilege or history and the past, and he goes and gets a tongue lashing from some of his colleagues. The De Lille matter rambles on for months and months. He doesn't seem to be on top of it. You know, increasingly, the DA is going to have to, in fact, it may be that the DA needs to have a real discussion post the election in 2019 about leadership and who takes it to the next level, if there is a next level to go to, because at the rate they are going, that 27% that they got as a national imprint in 2016 in the local elections may be in danger. With an ANC that's attracting more and more positive attention with Cyril Ramaphosa in there, despite his flaws and many of the flaws of the ANC, then the DA needs to realize that it's no longer easy pickings as it used to have under Jacob Zuma. And I'm shocked and surprised that they are going through this esoteric debates and fights, which are not doing them any favors.
Yeah.
So with 1 year to go, the DA needs to shape up, or it will find itself in trouble. Certainly the machine that's the DA is not moving the way it moved just 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It looks very confused. It looks leaderless. It looks like it doesn't know what it wants to achieve.
What's the center? Who's at the core? That's the point. Who are they trying to appeal to? Where are they growing? What kind of a party do they want to be? Because if you're going to compete with the ANC, you need to know who you are. Just because they're a juggernaut.
Absolutely. The ANC comes with a history, as you say, it's a juggernaut. It's got the numbers. It's got all this. If you're going to take on the ANC, you better do something fast. So if the DA itself is so at war with itself, think about the murmurings of a coalition with the UDM, where Bantu Holomisa was quite, we need to talk and so forth. This is under Helen Zille. Think about COPE. For me, the natural next step after the coalitions of 2016, I thought by now, Musi Maamane would be standing there and saying, my comrade, Tera Lekota, is now in the federal executive of the DA. You'd have thought that Bantu Holomisa, even with him chirping at the DA in Nelson Mandela Bay, he actually would have, and many in the UDM, there's a natural home almost for them in the DA.
We saw how these opposition parties can unite when they did against Jacob Zuma.
Exactly.
And look how much progress was made in some of the metros with the EFF even. And there is a huge ideological chasm between the two. But it can be done. Instead, there's no leadership. It seems that Musi is rudderless. It seems that whoever it is that perceives themselves to be at the center of the DA is unknown to us. So why would we want to vote for them?
Exactly. But there's a tragedy in that. And maybe, the key thing about, like the DA and dislike them, or like COPE or UDM or EFF or dislike them, the key thing is that if there's anything that Jacob Zuma taught us, it's that we need a strong opposition in South Africa. We can have the ANC in power as much as it likes, but we need someone to hold the ANC and whoever else comes to power accountable. So it's a tragedy that you have the DA is eating itself up. The EFF can't seem to get it together to be coherent, whether it wants to get rid of Athol Tollip in Nelson Mandela Bay, or what do you stand for exactly, except, shouting about one issue. You need a strong opposition. And I'm not by any means saying the ANC must go. If the EFF wins power, you need a strong opposition. If the DA wins power, you need. And so an overly powerful ANC where Jacob Zuma can laugh and say to people in parliament, you come here with your meanders or whatever he says. That is dangerous for our democracy. So the implosion of the DA, or the mini implosion of the DA is a concern, because it means that come 2019, the ANC might go from 62% back to 66% or 69% where it was in 2004. And what that means is that you have a party that is very close to arrogance, because it can do whatever it likes. The reason why the ANC got rid of Jacob Zuma, the reason why the ANC is getting rid of Supra Maumapelo, is exactly because in the Northwest, the EFF has 13%, 14%, and it can go to more if they don't do anything about it. Others can go to more. So they fully realize that we are in trouble here. We need to do something about it. But if they don't, then they're in trouble. So for me, the implosion of the DA is not really, do you like the DA or whatever?
No,
It's do something now.
It's bad for the whole country.
It's bad for the whole country.
Another thing that's bad for the whole country is Supra Maumapelo, but he's resigned. Is that what he said?
As we speak, he says, yes, I've resigned. No, I haven't resigned. Well, I'm waiting for my people and so forth. But there is no doubt. There's no doubt that Supra Mahumapelo is gone. And I think what Supra Mahumapelo this week was going through is what Jacob Zuma went through on the 13th and 14th of February this year. It's the stages of grief, in denial, acceptance, and okay, I'll do it, and finally step out the door. And the past 2 weeks when Supra Mahumapelo was refusing to step away was essentially him refusing to stare reality in the face. There was no way he was going to stay while people are protesting against him. If it stayed, people were going to riot even more. If he refuses to go, he will end up like Mangope with people running into State House and ransacking his property and calling for his blood. So there is no doubt whether it happens on Friday, whether it happens next week or whenever, he's out. But for me, I think, you know, Jacob Zuma last year this time seemed like such a powerful guy. He had the so-called Premier League. Where's the Premier League now? Ace Magashule is in Joburg. He's being investigated by the Hawks. His office got raided. Didi Mabuza saw the light of day and went with Ramaphosa in December, and Ramaphosa won, and he's now the deputy president of the country. Supra Mahumapelo, who...
Which is like not really having a role. It really is. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's a poison chalice that.
It is.
Because you can't really do very much.
No, absolutely not. Supra Mahumapelo is about to leave the premier's chair in the Northwest. But those were the three movers and shakers in support of Jacob Zuma and Nkosi Zanadlamini Zuma. All of them, except for, well, not Didi Mabuza, but certainly Supra and Ace Magashule. Ace Magashule's two children work for the Guptas.
Right.
Ace Magashule is being investigated for giving an ambulance tender to a Gupta-linked company. He said when they took your money, my money, used it for their wedding in Sun City, that, oh, they're bringing economic development to our country. I mean, to our province. It's ridiculous. He's out. And you know, I think all these people who have been, there's been a lot of bravado post December where people said, no, we'll stand up against Ramaphosa, we'll do this. But slowly but surely, they get painted into a corner, and they have to accept the inevitable. So Supra Mahumapelo, it's a bit like Macbeth, you know, it's a bit like, it's Shakespearean, because you look at these people all full of vim, vigor, yep. Vitality. Oh no, we are this. I mean, Supra Mahumapelo used to run around thinking he's, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. And now, he's almost begging for...
But isn't this cool in some ways, Justice? Because we often talk about how, you know, outside of the urban centers, a lot of voters don't make their feelings known, and they don't have the mechanisms to be able to make change happen. Mm. And here in the Northwest, the people have made change.
The people have.
And they've said, we don't want super anymore.
Yeah. He can say, oh, and you know what he's got? It's very interesting. He's got his provincial executive committee and they love him and they've, you know, always, supported him. But the people have stood up. The people who have said there is no service in our hospitals, that you can't get medicine. People have fallen off their HIV treatment regime because of this guy and his useless administration. Those people stood up. And, boom, he's gone. So all that bravado, all that bragging and running around, you know, calling himself Black Jesus. Well, you know, what's happened to the Black Jesus now? He's at the door and saying goodbye. And by the look of things, there are so many investigations, the hawks doing this, the hawks doing that. One of these people, and many of them think that they won't be followed up by the law, but I think the law will come for them. And I think that's where it's going to be very, very painful. So, you know, if there's someone sitting out there thinking it will never come for me, Supra Mahuma Pelo, it's come for him.
There's an age of accountability starting to dawn in the ANC, and it's been long overdue.
You know what? The nicest thing about accountability is that some people don't think we should be accountable, but loss of power will make the ANC accountable. If enough of us stand up and say, Mduduzi Manana must go, and the ANC realizes that, you know, if I'm a conscious man or if I'm a woman, I won't vote for an ANC that sits there with a woman beater in its top 80, then the ANC will get rid of him. But until the pressure is there, then nothing will happen.
Well, it's not as if they've got their shit together in the Eastern Cape either, is it?
No,
in that place.
Cape,
what's happening there? Because we remember that the chair conference.
Yes.
The chair conference was just before December and the proper Nasrec situation.
Yeah.
What happened?
So what happened there was that the guys who were losing, and they were the sort of Zuma guys, walked out of the conference. The guys who were the Ramaphosa guys said, you can leave, but don't think we're going to stop. Okay. We're going to continue and hold this conference. So they held the conference. They elected new people, and the new people went to Luthuli House and said, look, it's all good. Here we are. And Luthuli House said, oh, okay. You did have a conference. They sent Zwundabele to investigate, but they stayed in power. Now those guys went to the premier and said, Baba, you need to clear out. You walked out of the conference, by the way. But there's been push and pull. Zwundabele released a report, but the ANC NEC seems to be veering towards, no, the guys who actually did stand for election and win are the guys who did stand for election and win. So you need to go. So there's still basically warring between these two groupings. Phumulo Masualle, who's the chair of the ANC in the Eastern Cape, who is the premier, and was kicked out as the chair, is still the premier. The other guys want him to leave,
mm-hmm.
And he's staying on. So the ANC has an interesting problem. Every week now, there are people from the Eastern Cape arriving in front of Luthuli House saying, hey, come and solve our problems there. The ANC doesn't know what to do with this because it thinks the guys who are the chair, the deputy, the secretary, are the legitimate guys. So it's one of those, it's limbo. And the ANC needs to resolve it, because if it continues like this, an election is looming in a year, and the ANC in a place where it used to be, the ANC in the Eastern Cape was like, just like God, you know, it just, everyone, you got up in the morning, you voted for the ANC, and maybe 1% would vote for the PAC, but the ANC had it all. And now, being so divided, it's seeing more and more people say, no, I'm not going, I'm staying at home. So it's a headache for Ramaphosa. But I think that the people who won last year at the chair conference are Ramaphosa people, and there is a push against them. But I think that they've got his support. They've got Guedamantashe's support. But it shows you that even with all the positivity around Ramaphosa, there's still problems in the ANC.
Well, isn't it interesting that there are so many places in South Africa that when things don't go the way of a certain group of people, they always say that they're going to make it ungovernable. I love that. As if that's good for anybody. You
it's
know?
Not good for them.
No.
You know, it's that's quite a thing. So the people who are against the current ANC leaders are people like Andile Lungisa,
yeah,
who was convicted of throwing bottles in the Nelson Mandela Bay Chamber the other day.
He smashed a jug over someone's head.
He did. I mean, this is...
We don't even... Who was it? Do we know who it was who got the jug on their head? Because we never talk about them very much.
Yeah, it was one of the... I think it was a DA guy. But, you know, I mean, Andy Lelungisa, you might have seen the tweet that he was doing the rounds last week where he... This is so sad. He said, the Americans have always lied to us. They've lied to us. They lied to us about the moon landing. And they said it was Louis Armstrong. No?
Oh my God. Yes. And then he deleted his tweet because yes. He realized he'd screwed up.
So, you know, you can't even get the names right, no. But you're already saying it's a conspiracy. And you sit there and you think, wow, you know, this is what is called a leader in the Eastern Cape. So that's what the ANC has to work with.
All right. To turn our attention away from them, but sort of not completely away from them, what is this land, the submissions? Because people have been asked to make submissions to this parliamentary portfolio committee. They're a joint committee on land. How many people have participated? Has it been small?
No, it's been phenomenal. So people will remember the EFF has been saying land expropriation without compensation.
Right.
The ANC, at its conference in December, particularly the Jacob Zuma supporting wing, decides in the last minutes of the conference that we're going to go for this, and they go for it. And, it's clear that they're going to collapse the conference. So, conference decides to go with expropriation without compensation. They go to parliament. The first thing Julius Malema says in February is, yeah, you guys are lying about expropriation without compensation. Put your show that you're serious by doing this. And he puts a motion on the table saying, we are going to change Section 25 of the Constitution. And changing Section 25 means that we do away with the property rights clause, and we essentially allow government to take away your property. Section 25 refers to all property. So it could be
your car, it could be your TV.
Exactly. It could be your invention.
And the idea of abandoning private property as an idea or as a concept, as a protected concept in the Constitution, this underpins our economy.
I mean, it underpins all relations in the world.
I mean, what's the point then of working?
Exactly.
What's the point of getting up in the morning? Just take what you want from someone else. And if you're bigger than them, then you keep it.
Yeah. It's take.
It's madness.
Exactly. So you need that if you're going to run an economy, if you're going to say you're a leader of any sort.
Yeah.
Anyway. So the ANC says, no, we're not going to change the Section 25. We will call for people to submit, make submissions, and tell us whether they think it's a good idea or not to do this. So the ANC, the EFF agree, and the motion passes, and this joint committee is constituted. Boom. So you end up, you have this committee, and then it calls for people to submit proposals saying, my name is Justice Malala. I live in Protea Glen. I have a house, and there are people who want to build shacks right next to my house. And I don't want that because the value of my property will plunge or whatever the issue may be. So that's where it ends up. It's opened up for comments. 140,000 at the moment, 140,000 submissions have been put forward. That means that the committee, which is going to divide itself up to go to the Northwest or to Limpopo or to Mpumalanga and listen to people in those provinces, has to sift through this 140,000 submissions and within 6 months, come back to us in August and say, yes, the people have spoken, and the consensus view is that, yes, let's remove Section 25 or let's keep it and find some other way of land reform.
So, in other words, it's complicated. With
140,000 submissions. Look, a lot of those will probably be, you know, people sending one-liners and whatever. And so it won't be as serious as that. But it just means that in 6 months, my view is that this committee won't be done. Already they're asking for an extension to September, but I don't think they'll be done even by then. So I think this thing is going to hang over the period right up to the election in 2019. You and I in May next year will be sitting here banging on about Section 25 of the Constitution. You're going to have Julius Malema and Floyd Shivambo and Cyril Ramaphosa in studio, and you'll be asking them about Section 25. It's not over. And I think it's just starting.
But in that way, aren't they leading people down the garden path? I mean, this question of land is not going to be resolved in one generation or even two.
No.
And to hang it out there as a kind of carrot to get votes is almost the most cynical thing you can do.
It's irresponsible.
It's irresponsible, it's cynical, but it's also giving people a false idea of what's possible. And I think that is almost intentional fraud with regard to the voters. It's like you want to defraud them intellectually.
Yeah, I think that ideas of development, of what it takes to be middle class or what it takes, I think property is central to it, yes. But I think we need so much more. And I think to speak to people as if change is not a basket of things, as if it's one thing and, you know, I will get the land and ta-da, it's old. I mean, it's, I think the word you use is appropriate. It's cynical. But it's where we are now. And, you know, it's what is said for me with this debate is that you can see it permeating other sectors of economic debate. So you had, this week, the former Reserve Bank governor, Tito Mboweni, saying, we need a state bank that's similar to the State Bank of India. Now, you know, people were quick to point him to the fact that the State Bank of India every year begs for money from the fiscus. A bank asking for money?
But Cyril from even government? Said he's not opposed to the idea of a state bank. I mean,
but this is the thing.
What do you want the state in this country who have proven they can't run parastatals? Why do we want them running any more than the absolute minimum?
I'll tell you. So I went to – I was at Telkom. Telkom is now a business that's been turned around by people like Sipho Maseko and Jabu Mabuse. Mm. But it's still – you can see that this thing is still owned by government. So I get there and I say, look, you're supposed to take money from me. But you didn't take the money because 15 years ago I said this is my cap for how much you can take from my account. And so you sit there. I owe you more, but you can only take so much. You don't call me. You don't say anything to me. So I say, anyway, so I owe you some money. Here's my credit card. Can I pay? They say, no, 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 no. You can't pay. You got to get out of here. Go to Checkers and pay there. I say, but it's your business. And you've got a credit card machine. They say, no, we don't take money here. We don't want money here. So it's what happened to efficiency? You know, Gareth, anywhere you go, paying for your stuff should be, if I was running a business and you said, Justice, let me pay you, I'd want to kiss you and hug you. And say,
right.
Yeah.
Thrilled.
You know, give me that money.
Yeah.
This is an organization that says, no, I don't want to take that money. It's extraordinary. So think about what's happened to SAA. Think about what's happened to Eskom. Think about what's happened to the post office. Think about what's happened to any state institution you can think about. It can't be run. And you know, Moeletsi Mbeki, I had a very nice discussion with him the other day. And he was saying,
you see, this is where the clever blacks are getting together. Julius would not be pleased to hear about
this. I'm sorry,
this.
But you know, I have the right and the freedom to speak to whoever I like. But Moeletsi Mbeki made an interesting point. He said to me, Justice, think about it. Gareth Cliff sits there and says, let me make something. And he makes something. And that something leads to people being employed and so forth. He says, if you are the so-called middle class, you work for government. Mm. So you demand higher increases. You're not interested in profits. You're not interested in all these other things that drive entrepreneurs. All you want is just a little bit more and a little bit more. And he said, that's where the problem lies. And giving a bank to someone who just wants their salary and doesn't want to make humongous amounts of profit because the shareholder is government and the shareholder doesn't care because they've got something else to do. Well, I mean, this is a problem.
Or worse, if you do want to make yourself very rich and you do want money, but you're prepared to take it and make it look like profit, but it's actually stealing.
Yeah.
That's way, way worse. And that can happen in government because, again, no one's really counting the pennies like you would if it was your own business.
Exactly. No, no one is. So, I mean, the idea that a state bank will, solve all our problems, a deposit-taking bank. In fact, people should try a deposit-taking bank. You know, people must travel more. Because if you go to Nigeria, about 14, 15 years ago, I worked with a Nigerian entrepreneur. So I had the pleasure and just honor to go to Nigeria quite a bit. At the time, the central bank governor there was shutting down. There were hundreds of banks. And they take people's money, take lots of deposits, and it would be, the Gareth Bank is shutting down. And where would he be? Oh, I'm sitting in the Caribbean with your money. Gone. Boom. And this is the thing, you know. People think, we're going to open a deposit-taking bank proper. Banks collapse. Banks collapse. People don't remember, but African Bank collapsed. And it had to be taken over by the central bank. Banks collapse and people think, suddenly we're going to have a state bank. It don't collapse. It will collapse. But when it collapses, then it's, the Minister of Finance, give us some money.
Yeah, which no one else would have recourse to.
Exactly.
There are a couple of things that we can do quick fire ones on. First of all, I see Tom Moyane is in real trouble with that charge sheet of his.
I'm so happy. I am so happy. You know, for years and years, Tom Moyane was swanning around thinking that it's like Supra. It's like
he wore a ring, a big ring.
A big ring, yeah. Massive.
Like a gangster.
Ring. I know. It's quite gangster. Maybe we should stop talking now.
But he's got some trouble on the way.
He's got some trouble on the way. Look, for me, I'm just glad to see the law working. It's not the law, but it's the charge sheet that Cyril Ramaphosa has given him. One of them is that there is CCTV footage of Jonas Makwakwa, his number two, going, and his girlfriend, can't remember what her name is, Elski, she also worked at South. They're depositing cash, okay? Going from in one day. So I'm at the ATM here. I put in some money, hundreds, tens of thousands.
Wow.
Then I go to another bank, put in more, and da, da, da. And the Financial Intelligence Center calls Moyane and says, your guy earns 20,000 or whatever per month.
How can he be depositing hundreds of thousands?
How can he be depositing hundreds of thousands in cash? Surely something's going on. Don't you need? Oh, he says, no, nothing's wrong. And he doesn't do anything about it. And I think of all the things, Tom Moyane, whether he gave the Gupta 70 million rand in VAT refunds or whatever, this one is the one where you say, guy, why did you allow this to go on and go on and go on? So I think he's going down. And, good riddance to bad rubbish, I say.
While we're talking about people who have lots and lots of money to spend, I see that Norma, the wife of Malusi Gigaba, is reported to have spent something close to 870,000 rand on travel. And that, of course, we pay for.
Yes. So you remember that...
And even COSATU have said they're disgusted.
I'm with COSATU on this one. So Norma Gigaba, Malusi Gigaba became finance minister on the night of 31 March 2017. That's when Pravin Gordhan was sitting at home watching TV when Zuma at midnight reads a statement saying, I have a new finance minister, Malusi Gigaba. Malusi Gigaba says, I'm going to convince the world that we are good guys. And lo and behold, his wife says, you're not going to New York on your own. I'm coming with. Now, you remember that Mr. Gigaba did have a bit of a problem with a lady in New York. So, you know, only proper. But the problem is this. The problem is that it just becomes this multi-country trip. And she's flying with him and business class, of course, and all that and all that. And I'm all for people going and traveling with their spouses. But, you know, at that time, we were being downgraded twice. We were being hit left, right, and center. Malusi Gigaba was going around saying, yes, we must tighten belts. And look, we spent 870,000.
You have to fly a lot of first class flights to clock up 870,000. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. That excludes the stipends
like,
and the
but
whatever.
But it's not like she's the one who's going out there trying to sell South Africa either. She's just the spouse, which she's, you know, she may be very important to him. She may, but then, I mean, when most businessmen travel and their wives come along, or most business women travel and they take their husbands along, they pay.
So, you know, I mean, it just shows you, oh, Malusi Gigaba, poor boy.
Shame. He's just a joke. All right, what about, speaking of jokes, I saw the president getting quite hot under the collar this week in parliament and telling Steenhuisen, who can be annoying, to shut up. I mean, that's not presidential language.
Donald Trump
is a foul-mouthed man and doesn't necessarily endear himself to anybody by his tweets. But I don't know if you'd say shut up to someone in polite
think
company.
This is the problem. You know, we chose a system. It's a sort of Westminster system of parliament, of parliamentary politics. And one of those is debate and it's heckling. So people who play cricket know that if you go on, it will be, oh, Justice, you're looking a bit like you've put on a few pounds there, whatever. There will be, what do they call it? Sledging. There's a lot.
It's usually witty and in good humor.
Exactly. You know. And this is what happens in our parliament. Even Jacob Zuma, with his arrogance and all sorts of things, in all his years in parliament, he didn't turn around and say, shut up. Might have said meanders or whatever, all these other things. But I think Cyril Ramaphosa needs to realize that, you know, when the EFF or when John Steenhuisen, irritating as he may be, chaps away and so forth, Cyril Ramaphosa is the president of the republic. He needs to act presidentially. He's been in office for just 3 months.
Do you think he's feeling the heat?
I think he was feeling a bit like, you know, I'm doing so much. But
because I actually looked into it. I didn't see the exchange live, and I looked into it just to see what would have prompted him, because he's usually quite a dignified man.
He is.
It turned out that it was – Steenhuisen was needling him about the 9 million unemployed people when it comes to minimum wage, which is probably what he should be doing.
That's his job. He's an opposition leader. You know, Cyril Ramaphosa, I think, took it badly because – the minimum wage was his baby, and he shepherded it through parliament, got it through NADLAC, and it's now something he wants to say, I've done this for the workers. And he doesn't take kindly to the fact that the DA is making hay out of it when he thinks he's done a good job. But that doesn't excuse it. You know, if you're the president of a country, you need to show that you understand that this is the democracy we have and that it will be rough. And you can't just turn around and tell people to shut up. So, you know.
One last thing that's quite interesting. Mduduzi Manana is still very much in the ANC's NEC, as you've pointed out a number of times. This grinds you, it grinds me, it grinds a lot of feminists and activists against gender violence, because he's a man who has been hung, drawn, and quartered in terms of the law, but nothing seems to have really had any effect on his position in the ANC.
Yeah.
What do you think the future is for him? I mean, he probably thinks he could run for president one day.
No, he actually thinks, I really do think, he thinks that he can do it. But for me, Mduduzi Manana scratches a symptom at the heart of the ANC, and it's that, what do you stand for as an organization? So, you might have seen this last week, Lucky Montana, who used to be, the head of PASA. There's a journalist called Peter Louis Marberg who has exposed all his doings.
He wrote the first Gupta book as well, didn't
exactly,
he?
Yeah. Exactly. So Peter Louis Marberg points out, you know, about the trains that could not go through a bridge under, you know, they're too, too high and all this stuff. So he points out that, you know, Mr. Montana, you didn't explain how you could pay cash for a house and who paid for that house and so forth. So Lucky Montana says, if I see you, I'm going to beat you up. So, you know, this goes on. People condemn it. But Tony Yengeni says, yeah, he writes in Xhosa thinking that, you know, we won't understand, but we, some of us try. So Tony Yengeni says, yeah, that one deserves Induk, basically deserves to be beaten up with a Nopkiri or a Shambok. So you're the national, you're a member of the NEC of the ANC. You are a leader, but you say people deserve to be beaten up. Journalists deserve to be beaten up. Nothing happens to him. Not a single ANC leader says, guy, you're bringing us into disrepute. This is not
reminds
what
me of when Makosi Khoza was being threatened by the ANC Youth League in KZN, and no one said anything.
No one said anything. They put her address on Facebook and said, this is where the traitor lives. It's disgusting. So this guy beats up a woman in a nightclub, pays her off and, you know, and does a plea bargain and gets away with it. They elect him 1 month later onto the NEC of the ANC. 4 months later, he beats up his domestic worker and then offers her 100,000 rand to make the problem go away. Over and above that, he says, no, she was trying to extort money from me. The tape that's doing the rounds now that's been found in which he makes the offer, I'll pay 100, he says in the tape. But no, what happens? Batabile Dlamini, that huge defender of women's rights, issues a statement saying, oh, you know, I'm concerned about these allegations that she was trying to extort money from him. Quite frankly, she should be saying, this man should be suspended until we get to the bottom of this. He should step aside. No, you know, let's let the law run its course. Let the law run its course? Mm-mm. I mean, what is that? But I think that's, you know, it's more than about Mduduzi Manana. It's about the ANC. And I think the ANC on these issues has totally lost its way, and that's why someone like Batabile Dlamini, who has been a defender of another person who used to trample on and denigrate women's rights, Jacob Zuma, is now the minister in charge of women's development and women's issues in our cabinet. Sure. These things are not taken seriously.
All right, Justice, it's a full plate.
It's a full plate. Sorry, we ended up on that depressing note.
No, but it's good. We got the chicken. We got the wedges with the peri peri. We got some coleslaw. We got the whole lot.
And it's hot.
It's hot. It's always hot. Thank you, Justice. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's on cliffcentral.com every week with Justice Malala. And don't miss his show on ENCA as well. A lot of people are big fans of the Justice Factor. And I think your book is still available in good bookstores.
Oh, yes, it's very much available. A bit dated, but... Oh,
hey, listen, some of those things you predicted came true.
Ah, yes. Ah, thank you.
See, that's why we have... He's like a Nostradamus.
I wish.
Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Kevin.
This is CliffCentral.com.